Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and this is LeVar Burton Reads. In every episode, I handpick a different piece of short fiction and read it to you. The only thing these stories have in common is that I love them. And I hope you will too. Humanity, y'all, is a work in progress. And every time it feels like, hey, maybe we've got a hold of something here, we can be sure that something's about to go wrong. We work, we dream, we make change, and it never ends. And I think that's true on a broader macro level and as individuals. It's something I've tried to come to embrace because existing consciously requires our active participation. It can be exhausting, grueling, fraught with difficult decisions, but you can also see it as deeply rewarding and so very joyful. Today's story is about the choices that go into existing consciously. Earth has become a hostile place. Humans are dealing with fires and drought and adapting to Earth's challenges. Our main character has the opportunity to start anew on Mars. The hidden forests of Earth and Mars originally appeared in Cast of Wonders, and it's by the writer Anna Zumbro. And you may have seen her work in the magazine of fantasy and science fiction, Nature, and Daily Science Fiction, just to name a few publications. She's written something really wonderful here about hope and grit and hard choices. So, if you're ready, let's take a deep breath. And begin. The Hidden Forests of Earth and Mars by Anna Zumbro. Seventeen hours before some of us are to launch on a 9 months and forever journey to Mars. My little brother Enoch lands on my tricked-out park place, and even he knows before counting his cash that he can't pay the rent. We've been lowballing him so he can stay in the game. He's six, but I bankrupted my dad last turn on this square, so he knows what's coming. His face twists into a pout, then calms with obvious effort. Kids who are going to Mars have to learn to bounce back from disappointment. He knows that, too.
It's a good thing,
my stepdad Hugh says, sweeping Enoch's money toward me.
There's an old astronaut tradition that you should lose a game before you launch. Uses up your bad luck.
The Monopoly game is vintage, with creased cards and half the tokens replaced by bottle caps or coins. Hugh's childhood set, which Dad has promised to keep.
Kayate,
Mom says.
Luck has little to do with it. You only need preparation and science.
And weather, I add. But you know, E, you don't have to be out of the game. We'll do a merger. You can play on my team. Enoch brightens and slides next to me on the couch, toting his cup of vending machine M&Ms.
"We're both the penny now?"
he asks. "We're both the penny." He picks it up and looks for the year.
"It's older than me,"
he says.
2023. It's a lot older than me."
"They're all older than you,"
Dad says.
"Or just about."
I give him a sisterly rib tickle, and for once he just laughs and doesn't complain. The adults trade smiles. It's been two surreal weeks of harmony. All five of us quarantining together in a comfortable suite at this spaceport in the middle of the desert, where the power never blacks out off schedule and the water always runs. In the mornings, we mingle with the other Martian settlers and their families over breakfast, watching the activity on the launch pad through the conference room window. Sometimes wisps of sand rise in the wind, weaving through a small constellation of Joshua trees in the distance. I wonder if the rocket fire will char them to a crisp. I was too young when my parents divorced to remember if they were ever other than an amicable pair of exes. Even so, I'm sure it's been awkward in little ways I haven't sought to notice. By now, the sweet smells of us, of burned popcorn and beer and bulk shampoo, though we've tried to keep it clean. We tried airing it out, too, but the wind blew in dust so fine it got through the screens. You can feel it when you walk around barefoot. Hugh wants to lose. He's superstitious for an engineer, and Mom doesn't, but I have the most cash and it's just a matter of time before their luck runs out. They're good at being lucky, though. Even as employees of the best-funded aerospace company in the world, they had to win an internal lottery to go on this mission. Millions of people would jump at the chance to leave Earth, to start over on a planet that hasn't yet rebelled against humanity. It's even more inhospitable on Mars, of course. But at least it's a fresh start. They never told me if Mom's name was drawn or Hughes, but it doesn't matter. The company's transforming their scientific base into a permanent settlement, the first of humanity's five Martian outposts to have a multi-generational community. Spouses and children were always going to be welcome, but not ex-spouses, naturally. Not Dad. Enoch is dozing on me by the time we finish. His curly hair flattened against my ribcage, chocolate-scented exhalations wafting up to my nose as I hold the half cup of beer I've been allowed with my left hand and take care not to spill it on him.
"We should really get some sleep,"
Mom says.
"Paloma, would you wake him?"
But he wakes on his own as I lean over to set down my cup. He's bleary-eyed through the sleep wells and buenas noches. Then he jerks upright.
"Wait, is this goodbye? Goodbye?"
"No, buddy."
Dad helps him up from the couch and guides him over to Hugh.
"We'll see each other at breakfast. Still one more day."
16 hours, 22 minutes. Back in my room, I've got a view of the moon, nearly full and half obscured by clouds. I can't see the launch pad from here, nor any vegetation, just a broad expanse of sand. When I sent a photo of the view from my window earlier to my best friend, Tabitha, she said it was a good stand-in for Mars. When I arrived at Mom's on that Friday night in September of last year, I sensed immediately that there was a gravity to whatever news she had to share. She'd ordered my favorite ravioli from my favorite restaurant, set the patio table with citronella candles and cloth napkins and champagne flutes for the sparkling grape juice. But there were only three place settings.
Where's Enoch?
I sent him to the Chens for the evening before you arrived,
she said, referring to our next-door neighbors, her neighbors. I lived with Dad during the week and Mom on weekends in the fall and spring, with the arrangement flipped for winter and summer. My education, too, rotated with my custody. Dad ran a forest school that provided fully accredited primary and secondary coursework, all free-spirited, gradeless, and outdoors. My time with him followed the semesters there. In winter and summer, Mom had me slog through extra courses virtually and acquire a real GPA, filling in gaps, though she never put it so bluntly. As a result, I'd earned enough credits to graduate 2 years early at the end of the summer. I was an assistant teacher now, along with Tabby, who was a year older and a forest school lifer like me. I'd missed the enrollment deadline to start college that semester and still hadn't submitted any applications, but was planning on studying for my forestry certification. Mom supported it as a fallback, not a life plan, and I half expected that that's what this was about. Maybe she was going to tell me about some professor acquaintance of hers willing to pull some strings. That, or she might be pregnant.
Siéntate. It'll get cold,
she said, looking up with an anxious smile and gesturing at my chair.
We have some news to tell you.
And then they told me. Mars. I stared past her at the backyard, imagining it rust-colored and bare. There was just one tree, a young male willow which we'd all planted together when she and Hugh bought the house before Enoch was born. It was sun bright with yellow blossoms in the spring, and now its leaves glinted autumnal gold in the fading light. Willows aren't forest trees, they're explorers that thrive in clearings and meadows. Only 38 people lived on Mars, split between 5 bases. A decade ago, there were none. It was still light out, but I looked up at the sky anyway.
You don't have to decide now,
Mom said.
We'll understand no matter which way you go, querida. No one but you can make this choice. We know. It isn't easy,
Hugh added. Mom looked stylish as ever. Chic bobbed hair, burgundy lipstick playing off her warm brown skin, thin gold necklace classing up a crisp white t-shirt. She'd worked so hard to be successful that she never let herself dress otherwise, even at home. Hugh nodded at her, his aviators slipping down his nose, answering some unspoken question I couldn't guess. Through the frosted glass tabletop, I could see his pale, freckled hand enveloping hers. They were trying to look calm, but they were glowing. No wonder. They'd won the lottery to beat all lotteries. They were waiting for me to say something, so I went with,
That's amazing. We're making history.
My voice didn't sound right. We're. I didn't know if I was counting myself among them or all of humanity. I imagined myself floating away, above the neighborhood association's surveillance drones, looking down on the house and the lonely willow. Whole cities shrinking into pinpoints of light, flickering like tiny distant fires. Oceans, a swirl of indigo. Turquoise, white. Then higher and higher until the earth was just a blue dot I could blot out with my hand.
Dad knows, doesn't he? You already told him.
Yes, I spoke with him this afternoon. He understands the magnitude of it, everything.
He'd been acting odd on the drive over, blasting music too loud, switching songs in perpetual dissatisfaction, repeating jokes he'd told too many times before. We had to detour around a rock fall from a few weeks prior that still hadn't been cleared.
"We can settle humans on Mars, but can't keep the roads on Earth functioning,"
he'd said. And also,
"Imagine just being able to start over."
"There won't be any trees on Mars," I said. Hugh chuckled, but Mom frowned.
"No, but there will be the potential for trees down the line. And to be among the first to plant them. And with the botany they're doing in the greenhouses, I can put you in touch with our lead researcher there if you want to know more. It's just revolutionary."
I know. And I also knew that no matter what she said about this being my choice, she was desperate for me to choose Mars, to join her and Hugh and Enoch on a sparkling new world from which we'd never return.
The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. And every episode is a living account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective, from Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama, to reparations. There's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Because stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Now, let's get back to our story. Tabby and I had the wolf pups for their morning hike on Monday. We'd had little rain all summer, so the spruces along the trail were dry and dropping needles. Between narrating facts for the kids about the local pine marten and three-toed woodpecker populations, Tabby pelted me with questions about Mars.
How would you date or get married? Would you have an arranged marriage?
I don't know. There'll be more people there eventually.
But not many. Will they have, you know, egg and sperm banks?
I didn't say anything, but she read confirmation in my face and burst out laughing.
Oh my God.
One of the wolf pups kept lagging behind, stopping every few yards to pull up her socks while two boys fenced with sticks. Tabby kept glancing skyward through the treetops.
"You could do mycology,"
she said.
"If you go, of course, but why the fuck? Why wouldn't you?"
The droopy sock girl stared at us, sucking on the end of one of her braids. I crouched down next to her.
"Hey, Scarlet, let's see if we can find some bugs on that stump."
"I don't like bugs."
"Let's check it out anyway."
I was 8 when Tabby and I became friends, though we'd both known each other for a couple of years by that point. I'd heard her parents were getting a divorce and told her, somewhat proudly, that I knew exactly what she was going through. But her parents spent months fighting over custody of everything they had, especially Tabby, until at last the judge asked her to choose who to live with. She told me once that she'd consulted a magic eight ball, or flipped a coin. She either didn't remember which or just didn't want to talk about it. Tabby knew what I was going through now, more than anyone else did. And yet, she didn't. I knelt next to the tree stump. It was wide, ancient. The center had partly rotted away, but it might still be alive. Trees sometimes share nutrients with a dead comrade through their network of roots and microbes. Forest socialism. Even though Mom's company was founded by billionaire investors, the settlement's economy would be run like a commune, at least at the start. Everyone with a role, everyone with the support they needed. No poverty, no one forgotten. Eden, until we inevitably messed it up. I opened the knife on my multi-tool. Alive for Mars, then, and dead for Earth. I'd used Tabby's method of leaving things to fate. I scraped away the top layer of decayed wood. There was green below, which meant chlorophyll. Life.
Ooh, Tabby gasped. Come here, everybody. Do you know what this means?
There's a whole hidden forest beyond the one you see. One of chatter and drama, rivals and friends. Trees talking to each other through scent, through the network of fungus embedded within the soil. They keep their friends alive, like this stump, because they can't bear to let go. What do they say to one another when their time on Earth is done? Dad's house was close enough to the state forest that we could bike home together after work. He usually let me lead. In the days after Mom's news, I started taking us on longer and longer routes home, trying to absorb enough Colorado autumn air to last me a lifetime. Dry leaves crackled beneath my tires and whipped past my face. Our street smelled of smoke one evening. The Santanas were grilling in their driveway. Their two boys played with a basketball, arcing it high, trying to hit a passing drone. Dad called the garage to open, but it didn't respond.
Blackout,
Mrs. Santana shouted.
Again? They're killing us.
He dismounted, fished his keys from his pocket, and opened the door. A heat wave had brought us three blackouts in the past week, triggering outages and wildfires throughout the western states, but the temperature had dropped to a tolerable sweat in the past couple of days.
Bet you won't get blackouts on the spaceship,
he muttered.
Would be a lot worse there, I said.
He wrapped one arm around me, slick with perspiration.
You know it's going to be fine, right? Better than fine. You'll love it.
You don't have to do that.
Do what?
Fake enthusiasm, I said. Like I'm a toddler and you're trying to convince me that pureed green beans are the best food ever.
That's probably better than what you'll be eating on the ship,
he grinned. Then, as if we had much choice, he said,
how about we dine outside tonight?
He'd been doing that all week, talking up Mars, downplaying any potential inconveniences while ignoring the biggest one, transparent as ice. He didn't want to stand in my way, didn't want me to feel any regret over jumping at this chance. Just once, I wanted him to tell the truth about it all.
I'm going to shower first,
I said.
Buckets ready in the tub, if you need it.
The water didn't go out nearly as often as the power, but we kept filled buckets and jugs in the bathroom and kitchen, just in case. With the power out, I couldn't heat up any warm water to mix with the cold. It was still probably more luxurious than Mars. I cranked the emergency light until I had enough charge stored to illuminate a shower. I reached toward the sink to test the water, but before my hand touched the faucet, I paused. Earth was the water planet. I could still get confirmation from the universe. Water for Earth with Dad, outage for Mars with Mom. I lifted the handle. Nothing. I started removing my dirt-stained clothes, bracing myself for the bucket shower. A cold sensation settled in my chest. The hard part would be telling everybody, yes, I'm going. Seeing the forest for the last time. Hearing the news from Earth, the storms and crises and unrest I wouldn't be able to do a damn thing about. Not that I ever could. Waiting for the last goodbyes in person, followed by the exchange of time-delayed video messages that one day, for one of us, would just stop. And knowing even now that that's how the conversation would end. A violent rumble sounded from deep within the pipes. Water sputtered out and a few drops splashed my bare skin. The flow calmed and proceeded normally for a few moments. Then it slowed to a trickle and stopped.
Remember the Thai cave rescue? What about the mission depicted in Black Hawk Down or the epic rescue shown in Captain Phillips? You've probably heard of all of these. But did you know that the U.S. Air Force Special Warfare played a pivotal role in all of them? These airmen are the most highly trained warriors on the planet. Other forces like the SEALs and Army Rangers call on them to provide skills no one else can. Not many people make the cut. If you think you can, visit airforce.com to learn more.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Now, let's get back to our story. 'Tabby was the first person I told early the next week. We had a day off from work and took the bus to Denver. At our favorite diner, the one that listed stupid questions on the menu with a charge of 75 cents, we split a cheesecake and fries.
"Mars," I said. "I've decided. I'm going."
"Of course you are."
"I don't know how to tell my dad."
"You know you'd have to tell one of them. No matter what."
"Yeah.
I'm telling you, he already knows. And he wants you to go. He wants the best for you. Even if it means..."
She turned away mid-sentence. I reached for her arm, about to say, "See, this is why I can't do it." But she was just waving over our server.
"Excuse me,"
she said to him.
"If someone offered you a one-way ticket to Mars, would you take it?"
"Of course I would,"
he smirked.
"You're trying to get charged extra."
She was right. Dad already expected me to go. Telling him was more of a formality.
"I'll tell him tonight."
"You're paying for the question,"
she told me.
"Because it's that obvious. I shouldn't have even had to ask."
I ran my hand along the crease where the cushions met to see if there was any change. One quarter popped out onto the floor. Heads for the scientists going to Mars, tails for the rest of humanity left behind. Heads. But I felt nothing. No disappointment. No relief. On our bus ride back, the intercom chirped with air quality warnings. Dad came to meet me at the bus stop.
"There's a fire,"
he said simply.
north edge of the forest.
Oh, but it's early, right? They can contain it.
Maybe, he said. I hope so. We've canceled class for the week, though.
This had happened before, a year ago, and 4 years before that. Both times we believed the forest might be finished, and both times we were wrong. That night, I dreamed I was on Mars. I moved through a dusty valley with no spacesuit, floating as though I were in zero gravity. Someone shouted my name. I turned and saw only a tree, a lone spruce that crumbled into dust as soon as I approached. The next morning, I woke up to a blaze orange sky and Dad packing our suitcases.
They haven't evacuated us.
Not yet.
Then with a sigh, he said,
But they will. Paloma, they can't contain it.
He tried to speak with authority, like the solid adult, unafraid to confront hard truths that he tried so hard to be. But it was too clear. The quick blinking, the shifting of weight. He didn't look like my father. He looked like a young boy overwhelmed by the wrongness of the world. I felt the sobs build in my spine before they erupted. It was the end of the forest. Dad pulled me in close, patting my shoulders.
I know,
he said. He did not tell me that everything would be fine. We drove to Mom's that afternoon. She had offered her basement as a place for Dad to stay.
I'm sorry, David,
she said when she met us at the door.
I know what it means to you.
He lifted his shoulders in an exaggerated shrug.
It's just trees, right?
He sighed.
Anyway, thanks for putting us up.
I played hide and seek with Enoch because it gave me a good excuse not to talk to anyone. I hadn't talked to Dad about Mars last night. Here, I wouldn't be able to avoid it much longer. When Mom started making dinner, Dad announced he was going for takeout, and Mom didn't try to stop him.
I'm going too,
I said.
Paloma, wait,
Mom called. We were quiet in the car. We both stared out the windows as the car navigated to a different Burger King than the one we usually went to, one in the opposite direction of the fire. I could smell it anyway, in the upholstery, smoky and smothering, the acrid smell of unwelcome flames. A hazy sky glowed through the sunroof, filtered by specks of ash.
What happens to the school?
We'll regroup, find another place to meet, come back to the forest when it's safe.
But there won't be a forest.
Oh, you know better than that.
Dad turned to me with an indulgent teacher's smile.
How do spruce forests work? Fire renews them every few centuries, or sooner, okay? But it will be back.
Not like it was. Not in our lifetimes.
Doesn't matter to the spruces. Forests know time differently. Some wounds don't heal in a human lifetime, but why should that be all that matters?
Right,
I said.
Societies flower when old men plant trees, knowing they'll never enjoy the shade, or however that goes.
It was a quote both he and Mom loved, but Dad had always seemed to mean it literally.
The forest will take care of the planting,
he said,
as long as humans protect the forest.
You're still sad about it, though.
Of course. But I know how this goes.
Back at Mom's, I helped seal the windows with painter's tape and watched the ash plumes on the horizon. Muffled electronic voices chirped throughout the house, a radio in the basement, cartoons in the living room, a news broadcast upstairs. The birds outside were uncharacteristically quiet. There was never a way to choose between my parents, but that was never the choice that faced me. I was inevitably going to strike out on my own one day, communicating with both of them from a distance. The choice was always about which hostile, human-shaped world would be my future, which trees I'd spend my life planting. Outside, the lone willow, dusk dark, swayed its branches in the wind. I've pictured saying goodbye to Mom and Enoch and Hugh so many times that when we actually do it, it's easier than I expected. I squeeze Enoch tight and tell him I'm proud of him. Mom hugs me for a long time and tells me the same thing. We promise to keep in touch to make our time-delayed video messages as full and funny as possible, to find each other's planets among the stars and blow a kiss goodnight. Though it occurs to me that the action might need some modification for a spacesuit. Then the mission director announces it's time for them to leave, and they walk down the hall to be helped into their pressure suits and undergo the final pre-flight checks. The forest school has split its classes between a local park and the burned remains of the forest that was, where we can study how new growth rises from the ashes. Enrollment is down, but Dad is enthusiastic in his pitches to curious parents.
This place will teach them about resilience, survival, the most important lessons they'll ever get.
In the afternoon, we head to the viewing platform. It's beyond the Joshua trees, so if we're safe, they have to be. In 2032, one of the company's early missions exploded on the launch pad. The escape pod worked, so no one was killed, but the memories in the tense hush of the crowd, the crossed fingers and clenched jaws. Mom promised me she had no doubt that the launch would go off without a problem, and she was right. The rocket rises on its column of flame, slowly from our perspective, and yet I know with dizzying speed.
"Well,"
Dad says, after the announcement that the ship has escaped Earth's atmosphere.
"They did it.
They did. They are safely to space, and I am still here, grateful and lightheaded. It feels as though the planet's gravity has shifted." I look down and rub the back of my neck, sore from having watched until I couldn't see the ship anymore. Abraham Lincoln's copper profile glimmers in the sunlight. I bend down to pick it up and notice the year is 2037, the year Enoch was born, the year pennies were discontinued. He always got so excited to find a penny. I'll have to tell him about it in my video message to him tonight. One of the things that I love about this story is the point of view. I mean, in science fiction, we get a lot of stories about leaving Earth, right? And what it's going to be like on the other end, no matter what the destination is. It's always, you know, a mystery and full of tension. But I feel like the point of view of experiencing this through the eyes of a teenage girl, it just puts a different spin on it for me. All the anxiety of not just what the future looks like and which of my parents I'm going to have to disappoint, but really what will happen to me? How will I survive out there, right? What's the experience going to be like for me? I really got a very clear sense of that in this story. And I also love the journey that Paloma is on, you know, in terms of where she sees herself in all of this. I mean, of course, there's the, you know, the dilemma of which part of her family does she disappoint. But in the making of her decision, she has that conversation with her dad where she's really, you know, bemoaning the fate of the forest. And he says to her, you know, the forest will come back, right? Fire renews forests, you know, every few centuries, he says, or sooner, you know. And she says, but not in our lifetimes. And her father's response just floors me. He says, it doesn't matter to the spruces. Forests know time differently. Some wounds don't heal in a human lifetime, but why should that be all that matters? For both the forest and for Paloma, there is a bigger picture. Right? There is a higher calling. And I don't think either of her choices would be wrong. It's just the one that's more right for her. And I think that's simply beautiful, that she makes the decision where she feels she can be of the most service to humanity. To the ecology. She makes a decision based on her moral compass and where she feels she can be the most use. That's awesome. At the beginning, there's a paragraph that sort of sets it up. Millions of people, it says, would jump at the chance to leave Earth. To start over on a planet that hasn't yet rebelled against humanity. Well, that that just slays me because that's that's what we're doing. I mean, that's where we are. This is one of those stories that isn't so much science fiction as it is our reality. However, we don't have a real clear plan for leaving this planet. I mean, we have an idea, we have some ideas, but we don't have a real solid plan that we can execute on, at least not yet. I read the other day, Mark Zuckerberg has a multi-million dollar bunker if he is hunkering down. In the event it all goes to shit, you know, ain't nobody leaving, at least not in the foreseeable future. So, you know, to me, this is one of those stories that simply reminds me of the perilous position that we've put ourselves in and the fact that we're still arguing over how we got here or what, you know, what's caused it. When you're still having that kind of argument while Rome is literally on fire, you're in big trouble. And so we are. The important thing, though, is how we decide to go out, in my view. I guess I'm the kind of person that believes that there's always a sliver, a shred of hope. And that hope resides in the hearts of humanity. May your heart be firm and solid in the resolve that how we behave towards one another matters. And may we all do our best to treat each other with kindness, dignity, and respect.
Hey.
My great thanks today to Anna Zumbro for allowing me to read her story. You can find more of her short fiction at her website, annazumbro.com. Our producer on this episode of LeVar Burton Reads is Julia Smith. She is the best in the business, y'all. Our fabulous researcher is L.D. Lewis. Always happy to have you aboard, my sister. We had additional research support this season from Talon Stradley and Josephine Martirana. Theme music by the extraordinary Brendan Burns. Editing and sound design courtesy of the fantastic skills of Mr. Casey Holford. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell a friend about it or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Like I say, share the short fiction wealth. LeVar Burton Reads is a production of Stitcher and LeVar Burton Entertainment. Our executive producers are Josephine Martirana and yours truly, LeVar Burton. And if you want to find me on the internet, I'm LeVar.Burton on Instagram, at LeVar Burton on X, or you can simply go to LeVarBurton.com. You can also join my book club at fable.co/LeVar. I'll see you next time, but you don't have to take my word for it.
Remember the Thai cave rescue? What about the mission depicted in Black Hawk Down or the epic rescue shown in Captain Phillips? You've probably heard of all of these, but did you know that the U.S. Air Force Special Warfare played a pivotal role in all of them? These airmen are the most highly trained warriors on the planet. Other forces like the SEALs and Army Rangers call on them to provide skills no one else can. Not many people make the cut. If you think you can, visit airforce.com to learn more.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.